I'd like you first of all just to cast your mind back to right at the beginning of the war when you were already a regular soldier. And I wonder if you can tell me what sort of reactions you had to the news that war had been declared. What sort of impression did it make on you?
Well, am I alive now?
Yes, far away.
It was a rather casual way the war started for us.
Yes.
I'll give my opinion.
Yeah.
Well, I was a regimental sergeant major. I was in Chalkley for the time, 4th Division, 10th Brigade, and I was watching a cricket match. There was a garrison cricket match on. And I was standing in a little wicket gate, which is just across the square from the barracks. And I went over and I looked at this match. My colonel was a player, an old Hampshire player, Sir Evelyn Bradford. And there were good, of course, garrison team in those days could get a good team out. We were playing with some leading, IZs or something, this Hampshire Hog, some of that sort of thing. You know. And there was a home. I wasn't an officer, of course. There was a home there. And then I saw sort of the brigadier was there, hauled in, and Bradford come off the field, my colonel, and in flannels. And then the brigade major come out, who happened to be an officer of my regiment. I remember it all so well, this, you know. Mm-hmm. And he says, you better stay here, this colonel will like speak, want you in a minute. And the colonel did come out. He says, when we went across the road to the barracks, where we were, he says, sound the mobilization call. Simple as that.
Which call?
The call, mobilisation.
Oh, yeah.
And which was a regimental call on 4 G's. And that was the first we heard of the war. Mm-hmm. It's as casually as that, really. Quite casually.
Yeah.
Well, the men, of course, at the barracks heard it and give a yell. They knew what it was, of course. And the men fell in the parade ground. And that year night, about that evening, 2 hours later, about half the battalion went down to the forts in Sheerness, or somewhere on the Thames defences, mm-hmm. by train. And, well, then after that, you want to go on?
That's fine.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, we went after that, the reservists, they would stay down there a few days until the territorials had mobilised. Mm. And then they come back to us, and then the reservists arrived from our depot, Fort George, up in Inverness, and then we were moved up to York.
Mm. When the actual, when it had time to sink in that this was a major war that was about to start, what were the kind of feelings that you had and your other colleagues and comrades?
I really don't know there's any feeling whether the mobilisation was enough to see.
Yeah.
It's what in the army terms of those days was called the precautionary period, mm-hmm. which only happened when war was likely to come, see? And we had to man the defences and the Thames and that sort of thing, you know. Well, then we sort of went on a roll. Then we were sent up to York, and then to York to Doncaster, because there was talk in those days the Germans landing in Yorkshire coast, you know.
Was there?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, of course, they attacked there, they were naval attack there later on. And then we come back from there after a few days, we come back to Harrow, mobilised there. We assembled there, the 4th Division,
yeah.
And we stayed in Harrow for a couple of days, and then Southampton, over to France.
Hmm. Were there any other of those kinds of rumours, like, you know, the Germans had landed in Yorkshire?
No, I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't know about mm-hmm. that, because you were sent there. You don't
yeah.
know. But there was always, of course, as you know, you can imagine, there was always a vision of war with Germany.
Yeah.
Had been for years and years, you know.
Yeah.
Germany was our enemy, no doubt about it, it seemed.
Was there any particular mood, either of the soldiers or of the civilians, that accompanied the news that war had been declared?
I can't tell you more
yeah.
than I know
okay.
myself.
Did
I was in my regiment. I don't know what the civilians were.
Yeah.
I didn't, never no contact with them.
Yeah. So the reactions of the regiment that you were with were just the usual procedures that applied in the case of a mobilisation?
Oh, a scheme. Oh,
yeah.
We had a scheme out, of course. Naturally, a mobilisation scheme.
Mm.
And mobilisation stores and harness and horse, all extra horses come in.
Yeah.
We had all the earmarked in the country round about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were, our transport, for instance, all horse transport, of course, was practically doubled, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that was her there, but I don't know if there's anything else, you know. It was part of the... It seemed to me just part of the routine we formed up there. We got the battalion fixed up, sent half battalion off. The colonel then stressed the battalion, the what was left. He said the last time we should speak before the reservists arrive. And he said a few words to them, you know, what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And he was still in flannels from his cricket match. See, this is going on. Funny thing about it, no, extraordinary. Yeah. And that was all, really. Then we started, of course, hustling in the barracks of mobilization, equipment issues.
When you learned that war had been declared and that you were going to have to go to France, did you at that stage have any idea or impressions about how long the war would last?
Well, the whole war was going to be over at Christmas, of course, 1914.
That was common.
Well, that was the talk ahead. The paper told us and all this sort of thing, too, yeah, you know. Yeah. That would be over. But Kitchener, of course, took over command, as you know, the Secretary of State for War. He was on his road from Dover, quite near us, Dover to France, when he's called back. And he immediately gave an order that they formed this army, Kitchener's army, we knew it as, and... said this war was going to last for 3 years or more or something.
Yeah. Apart from what was said in the papers and Kitchener's own reaction, which is quite well known, was there any commonly held view by the soldiers themselves, or did they just not think about this?
Never thought about it.
Fine.
And I must say I never thought about it.
Yeah. Can you tell me whether, before you actually went across to France, you had any particular impressions of what kind of war it would be, of what form it would take?
No idea.
You didn't?
No. No, this trench war was all quite unthought of to us, and grenades and things of that sort.
Yeah.
But we've never come into contact with these sort of things before.
Yeah. So trench warfare was a complete surprise to you?
Quick surprise, yes.
Yeah. Mm. You'd expected what?
Well, we never got into trench warfare until we crossed the Aisne.
Yeah, you'd expected something different from trench
warfare. Well, it's quite like they had the last war, movement,
yeah.
Mobiles, everything. Mm-hmm. You know, mixed, and there were Germans that were coming on to us. We met the Germans, first of all. They were mobile enough.
Yeah.
And so were we, of course, in retreat from arms, of course, mobile, and coming back again.
Yeah. Before you left for France, did you make any particular preparations for war within the regiment? I mean, was there any particular training?
No, we got one. Of course, we were all reservists. Most of our men were reservists, you see. But
I
was a regular soldier. I was a serving soldier. Mm. But we have quite a lot of young people who are young soldiers, you know, and we're left behind. And the reservists come up, I think about 600, I suppose, we had. Mm. And our battalion was 1,000, so I suppose
more than half
were reservists, you see.
Yeah.
And, of course, some of these poor fellows suffered a lot, you know.
Why was that?
Been thrown into this march retreat from arms without any training.
Yeah.
I think we had one day's manoeuvres at a place called Strensel in Yorkshire. Mm. It's just outside York.
Yeah.
And I remember it well, because the colonel said then, this is the last time, the next time you do this will be the real thing.
Yeah.
I said.
What form did those manoeuvres take? What kind of exercises did you go through?
Well, I don't. They're just what we'd always been taught, you know, just attacking the whole time, you know, no retreating about it. All attacking.
Mm.
Battalion attacks. I'm only talking about battalion. Mm. I don't know. All battalion attack the same. We all have formations, little lines just to go forward, you know.
Fixed bayonets.
And fixed bayonet charge, and they finish up about that last 100 yards. You got as far as that, and charge.
Mm.
That was the end of the battle. Mm. It should have been.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have any instruction about digging fortifications and things like that?
I suppose we...
If you don't remember...
I can't remember. We all carried a pick and shovel, you know. We had a little pick on our backs and a little hand, a little thing on our bayonet. The sharp hand pick sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
We had those. I think they've done away with them now in the army.
Yeah.
We had a little pick and axe, which the men dug in with their own.
So those were standard issue before you left for France?
Oh, yes, before the war, some years before the war.
Yeah.
Mm.
So when you actually got over to France, you did have the equipment for digging?
For yourself.
For digging.
You cover yourself up, yeah. Nothing but the heavy digging would come on afterwards, of course.
No.
We had, I think, in the transport shovels. Yes, we did have shovels and picks in the transport, carried by the limbers and that sort of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. But each man did his own little pick and shovel too, you know. Yeah. Enough to, after he worked, you've got head protection, that sort of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, we had that.
Apart from the entrenching tools, how well were you? How well equipped were you in other respects?
Well, we of course, were first class, of course. I don't quite know what to... We had fine rifles, fine ammunition, laser ammunition, Mark 7, I think it was called, pointed bullets, you know. Yeah. We had all those things. Machine guns, we had only two, I think it was. Only two at the time. Increased to four.
Yeah.
And then they brought out the, what they called a Sten gun, I think, after a year.
Yes. When you got out to France, did you find that there were any particular ways, there were any particular operations or activities which you were involved in France that you hadn't really been properly prepared for, either by way of training or by way of equipment?
No. I wouldn't say there was.
You could do with most...
We couldn't have done any better.
Right.
If they could have done anything, perhaps machine gun, another two or three machine guns ought to have been a battalion, but that come after. That's been wise after the event, that was, of course.
Did you find any of your equipment proved to be quite useless?
No, I don't think we did, no. Mm-hmm. We had web equipment. We'd only been issued a year or two beforehand, and at 1900 something web equipment, done away with the old bandoliers of South Africa. These are carrier... I wasn't in South Africa, it was Egypt at the time, but they carried a bandolier with a... You've seen the bandolier, of course, it's like a Wild West sort of business.
Yes, yes. This is rather a general question, but when you look back at the First World War and consider all of your experiences on the Western Front, what's the most outstanding impression about the kind of life you had on the Western Front that remains with you?
Well, I don't know. It was war. I mean, we took it as war. I didn't had no impression. I took it that it's war, and they've got to put up with it. That's all. I never had any other impression. You lived in the trenches. If that's what you mean, the trenches. There was no particular thing about it. As far as food, and that was concerned, excellent. Excellent food was. And, well, I don't know what else I can say about it, really.
Well, no, fine, that's okay. I just wondered if there were any things that particularly impressed you that you
nothing. It was a war. We all realised a war. And you had a rough... There was rough in the trenches. You come out to billets of rest after when the war got going in its normal way after the first few months rush, you know.
Yeah.
We got into... Come back into billets and... We had our bath there given to us and things of that sort, you know.
Yeah.
And we had our field kitchens that were given to us and we had food. That was one thing we felt at the very beginning. We didn't have field kitchens. My division didn't. I don't think our division had. But they come shortly afterwards.
What did that mean? That before they came, you had to do...
Had to do the cooking. And when you come in the rest, when you had time, you had to get the dixies out and light fires and all that sort of thing, you see. Instead of there, the field kitchen were cooking the food with on the march. They say that was a great boon.
When did they first come?
That winter.
In the winter of 14.
14. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. As a soldier, which were the aspects of the conditions on the Western Front, particularly the ground and the climate conditions, which caused you the most trouble? Which gave you the biggest difficulties?
Do you mean in the trenches?
Well, anything you like. Just speaking as a soldier, which aspects of...
To me?
Which personally caused you the biggest headache? Which things were the most unpleasant?
Well, I always thought rain was the downest unpleasant for me. Mm-hmm. Wet. That's what it was, really. Wet clothing, wet everything on you, and... that was the worst answer I felt.
Was that a pretty common condition?
It was in the winter, especially up north at when we got up to Ypres, in the Ypres salient, yes, it was wet in Belgium, and post-Passchendaele was very wet, of course, very wet there. Still, when the battle had to go on, went on.
How did the wetness affect normal life and operations?
They're very healthy, I think the men were.
Yeah.
I think they're very healthy. I can't remember any serious sickness any more than you have at home.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the point out there is to see a soldier was sick. He went to the doctor and he went off to see, you see no more of him. See, the casualty clearance station behind you. And if he was too bad, he went to the base and then home. That's all.
Yeah.
So you find a fellow goes sick, you had no sick men. You didn't want sick men, of course.
Yeah. when you consider the kind of operations you actually had to fight on the Western Front, were there any kinds of activities or operations at all which at the time you were particularly critical of?
I couldn't answer that question, really. I couldn't answer it. I mean, I would do it with my colonel, and that's, we just done what we were told to do, that's all. As soldiers' obedience. It's, no, I have nothing to say about that.
So there was no... Was there any general criticism of any kinds of...
Oh, against your commanding officer or that?
Yeah, no, the way the war was conducted.
Oh, I had lovely commanding officers. No, I was saying about my commanding officers.
Right.
No, never.
Yeah.
I sort of a great one, Sir Evelyn Bradford. He was killed in the Ain. Surely it didn't last long, very long, but then I had very good command also all through the war till I left. And